Well, this hard-hitting report by the Independent Police Conduct Authority, which has found a toxic culture within police in which bullying is rife, with an autocratic management style which rewards bad behaviour. The IPCA was the review was launched after an investigation by RNZ in which almost 200 current or former sworn and non-sworn police staff came forward, that is, to the review. The IPCA report identified seven key themes underlying the bullying experiences: intolerance of questioning or dissent, favouritism and protectionism, marginalisation and ostracism, abuse and intimidatory conduct, sexist and racist behaviour, inappropriate office culture and lack of empathy and caring. A joint survey between the IPCA and police found 2 in 5 police staff personally experienced bullying behaviours in the past 12 months. Our guest is the president of the police union, the police association, Chris Cahill. Good morning.
Morena, Catherine.
How do you read this?
Well, unfortunately, it's not surprising. It sort of follows on from the report that the previous commissioner asked for. And then we've also surveyed our members, had very similar results. And individually, members have come forward to us and told us about their experiences. So, as I say, unfortunately, not a surprise.
When did you survey your members?
2019. So about that time, 25% of those members claimed or said they had been victims of bullying behaviour of some sort.
And was that prompted by this report, by this publicity gaining strength?
Yeah, it was certainly part of that. It's something that's been building for quite some time, and I think it was good. The one good thing about these reports and this one yesterday, it's bringing it out into the sunlight.
Has it always been and been tolerated?
To a degree. I mean, you have to look at the history of police. It's very much a hierarchical structure in the past. It is an organisation that often you need to just get on and do things. Someone has to say, you do this, and we've got to get a result. But as it's as the organisation's developed and grown, and we've got a much more diverse workforce, and we're doing a lot, you know, police now do a lot more than just the attend jobs sort of thing that you traditionally think of a police. The model had to change, and it perhaps didn't move with the times.
I'm interested whether it needed to move earlier, but we'll get to that when it comes to some of what the report finds. It talks about pockets. It says it's not everywhere. It talks about pockets. Where do you believe things are worse?
Look, it is quite, you know, it's pockets, but it's a lot of pockets. There's some areas that stand out more than others. You know, the CIB comes in, you know, when you look at it, comes in for a fair bit of flack. But what probably the most disappointing is the leadership stuff, you know, the top, from the top down is where it was identified as starting from. And, you know, that's certainly my experience as well. As being part of some of these leadership teams, I found that if you had a different opinion, you really were asked to just keep it to yourself, and those opinions certainly weren't valued. And if that's what's happening at the top, it flows right down into work groups. And that's a really negative environment. You're just missing out so many valuable opinions if you're not listening.
Well, to the earlier point of whether it needed to change earlier, CIB are investigating serious crime. They may be investigating murders. They are investigating things that can lead to miscarriages of justice if there is not room for a diversity of opinion. So this is about the well-being of staff. It's about a heck of a lot more than that, isn't it?
Look, you're dead right. 100%. If you have an investigation where people can't express their opinions, where different ideas can't be explored, you do run that risk of having tunnel vision. And, I mean, there has been times when that's occurred. So that's a very good reason why these things need to be addressed, especially when you look at the diversity that we're now bringing into the police. If we don't value the opinions of that, you're really wasting the effort.
Diversity means many things. It can mean diversity by sex and gender and age and ethnicity and all those things. It can also mean simply offering a contrary opinion to one that is fallacious or just needs to be tested. Now, which of those is a problem, or is it broadly a problem that this is the way things are in this department or this office, and don't be questioning it?
Look, I think what we've saw, and this is more recent than historically, is a challenge around, there's been a change in the focus of police, there's been a different management strategy brought in around prevention first. And when people have challenged with you throwing the baby out with the bathwater, shall we say, around that, that's been held back. And it's really interesting in this report, a lot of the people that claim to have been bullied are people you might pick as the bullies. So older white males who have a different opinion around a change in strategy and are challenging whether that's effective, and they feel they've been shut down. So it's not just what you might say newer, younger people with new, fresher ideas. It's also older people who are challenging making repeating mistakes, shall we say.
Well, it's definitely not, because of the 200 who came forward, 75% had worked for more than 10 years and 45% for more than 20 years. These aren't delicate ingenues, are they?
No, they're not.
So, come back. When would that change in strategy happen?
Well, the Prevention First strategy, which has some really good things, I need to be really clear, it's really good in many ways, came in about 2012, around about that sort of period, 2012, 2010. And the problem with it was that it was all these new ideas, but a lot of people felt they were forgetting what worked in the past. And if you don't remember what worked in the past, or you stand to repeat the mistakes of the past. And that was where there was a lot of clashing with older people that had been around and were experienced. And also,
so who was the bully in that situation?
Well, the mantra that went through a lot of management teams, that this is our strategy, you won't question it and you won't challenge it. So when people stood up and said, well, look, I agree with this part of it, but hang about, this part isn't really going to work for these reasons. Nope, we're not listening to you. And that became quite prevalent for a number of years.
What are the other instances in which bullying happens?
Look, certainly favouritism. I mean, the appointments process has long been the subject of derision within the police. It's fairness of it. So the idea that people choose who they want to appoint rather than following a fair process has been a big issue.
The chair of the Independent Police Conduct Authority said on Checkpoint last night, in response to a question, is this corruption, that under a wide definition of corruption, it would fit? Is it that bad? Mates appointing mates? Or mates appointing people who think and will do exactly what they want? What is it?
Well, I think the step to corruption is, to me, a step too far, but certainly appointing people that will agree with your opinion and that you feel aren't going to challenge you has occurred. And so that's one thing we're really pleased to see, a big change in the appointments process that brings in a much more independent model.
And other areas of bullying?
Look, the nepotism around work groups where it was only your work group that, and you were, if you weren't on the same wavelength, you were shut out and not valued. And that particularly could happen.
What's the wavelength need to be?
Look, I think to me the big overall thing for me is understanding that more opinions are better. You don't have to listen. You don't have to accept every opinion, but if you listen to more, you're going to come up with a better solution to most problems.
Is this drilled in from day one in police college? And let's be fair, this is a police force. It's like any armed services or any service, actually. One of the risks surrounding them is that you do work under duress, you do work as teams, you do need to work at pace, you do need to be able to take instruction. All of that is understood. But is this intolerance for anyone who expresses any difference, and I imagine that, well, I know it's as bad as it gets in some instances, is it drilled into the culture from day one?
No, look, I think it's, and now it's probably the opposite. I mean, certainly in the past, as you say, it was an organisation that you need to do as you're told, we've got to make decisions, there's urgent things happening, if you don't do what I tell you, something could go wrong. So that was, you know, perhaps an old effect. In recent years, there's been a dramatic change in training and in the messaging that goes out there. And it takes a while to change that culture. And that's why I think it is important to remember this report said it's pockets. It's not systemic right across the organisation.
You said it's a lot of pockets.
Yeah, that's why you wouldn't downplay it.
20% of those who spoke to the IPCE were from police national headquarters. Grossly disproportionate. I think a third were from districts in Tamaki Makaurau. That's broadly proportionate. It was broadly gender split. In fact, slightly more male than female who came forward. But 20% coming from police national headquarters. What's happening there?
Yeah, well, that's where I talk about it starts at the top. And if you've got a leadership that isn't inclusive right from the top and doesn't value that diversity of thought, that's what's going to flow through organisation. I think that's changing, and it's changing quite quickly. And I applaud the new commissioner. Yeah, he's been taking a bit of flack in the last week, but one thing he is, he's open to communication, he's open to listening, and that's starting to flow through. And I think if that gets all the way down to the troops on the ground, and they realise they are allowed their opinion as well, I think we can see some positive change.
Are there particular districts that are particularly bad? Names weren't released in this report and weren't indicated by the commissioner when requests were made by the media. Are there some districts that are particularly bad, depending on who's running the show?
Not necessarily. I think the challenge you have when you look at these reports, there's been some big change gone on in police in the last few years, and that can really challenge people. So you've got to balance, is the change that was maybe needed, has not everyone come along on that change, so they feel they haven't been listened to? So it's getting that balance right. I think in general, if the district commanders are getting told how to operate appropriately from the top, then all the districts should end up operating the same.
You're the Union for Police Officers. The report doesn't paint a great impression of your advocacy for members when it comes to bullying. One reported that she was advised by the Police Association not to bother to complain about a known bully unless she was going to leave the organisation. Is there pervasive an expectation that there's no point in complaining?
Firstly, that advice wasn't good advice, and I don't know who gave it, but to a degree, yes, there was. I mean, that is one of the things this report identifies, is that people that did complain weren't listened to or were treated badly. And look, the association is in a slightly difficult position, because normally the person complaining and the person complained about are both their members. So our view, it is to hold a police to account to follow appropriate procedure, okay. And that it wasn't what wasn't occurring.
Well, here we are from the IPCA report again. It's clear from the accounts we received that when people have come forward, support for them was often non-existent. This was coming forward in general. Those who came forward expected that support would be provided by HR, but generally nothing was offered. Similarly, it was reported to us that when the Police Association will come to the aid of the person complained about to ensure the processes were being properly followed, however, nothing will typically be offered to the person making a complaint, even when they're a Police Association member and assistance was sought. Is that what happens? The priority of the association is the proper procedure for the person on the receiving end of the complaint?
Well, no. For both sides, and that's what this report highlights, that there wasn't proper safety and procedures for people coming forward.
Right.
And
so
police are responsible for looking after their staff.
But aren't you responsible for looking after your members when they come seeking help?
Well, we have limited resources to be able to do that. The better process is to make sure police have the situation that people can come forward safely, and that there's a clear policy that is followed and procedures that are followed, and that's what wasn't happening. So we, as the report identifies, there was no recording of whether there were multiple complaints against people. A lot of stuff was never dealt with at the right level early enough. So it is a tricky one, don't get me wrong. I mean, clearly at one level we have to make sure there's natural justice for people complained about, but police need to make sure they've got such their house in order to wrap around these people when they come forward.
Has this got so bad for some people that it has possibly cost them their life?
I couldn't say for sure, but I don't think we can downplay how serious it has been for some individuals. Without a doubt, it's cost them their career, and it's certainly cost them serious mental health. I'd like to think it hasn't gone that far, but I certainly wouldn't rule it out.
If there is, it appears, little procedure then, certainly that is being followed for dealing with this, what needs to happen?
Well, police have put a new process in place, Kia 2, to try and standing together to try and bring people into a better process. We want to see if that actually works. So it's a matter of holding police to account now. And a lot of it is, you're dead right, it's around HR and ER doing their job when people come
HR
forward.
HR will always look after the organisation it serves. Sorry to be blunt, but that is its primary responsibility, right? It certainly needs to set processes. But where will the advocacy sit for those coming up against an organisation? And do you need to look to your own resources, or whether your own resources need to increase so that you can be part of that process?
Well, yes, we do need to look at it. I agree with that. But I just challenge on that. If HR are to look after an organisation, if you don't look after your people, you're not looking after your organisation. So to me, that is first and foremost what they should be doing, looking after their people. And I still think we can do better if we challenge police around looking after their people than try and find individual help. Because if they're looking after their people, less people will come to us in the first place.
4 out of 10 police staff from that survey report personally experiencing poor behaviour in the past year. 2 out of 10 personally experiencing bullying. So it seems the organisation has a long way to clean house. From what you've seen, and I understand work did begin post, in fact the police commissioner says work began post the Debbie Francis review, the earlier review, which found bullying. What's changed?
Well, a willingness to talk about it for a start. I think that's one thing. The acceptance, we've got a problem. And it's a bit of a cliche, but in the past, police would just deny there was a problem. Or they'd say it's pockets of individuals that are unhappy or uncomfortable with change. I think now these reports, they've both mirrored each other, really. I think it tells you, no, there is more of an issue that needs to be addressed. So I'm encouraged by the Commissioner's view that we've got to make changes that allow everyone to be at their best. So it's now holding them to account around those changes.
One submitter said it is so entrenched that you won't be able to change it. And I kind of understand where they're coming from. Does that mean that some people will have to go to change this because they are so entrenched in the way of doing things?
Certainly, if there's some people that aren't willing to accept that their behaviour is what's causing the damage to these individuals, they should move on. But I think we need to look at the positives here. It is not systemic, and there has been dramatic changes in the police. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of positive cultures in the police. You still survey police, they'll tell you it's a great place to work. A lot higher engagement than many other organisations. So it's not all bad. But you shouldn't try and hide the bad behind the good. So as long as you bring this to light, I think we can make positive change.
Let's look again at Police National Headquarters. There was a common view that Police National Headquarters had a particularly toxic culture which had worsened in the last 5 years. Now, again, does that mean that either people will need to change or the people will need to be changed? Would you accept that?
Yes, but both have to occur, really. I think there has been some significant changes there as well. I think we need to be careful and say there's a lot of people have left the police recently. It doesn't mean they were all bad people. And there was a lot of good things going on. I mean, we've got a clearer strategy in the police than in any other time in my history. Having a clear strategy, police brought in values, when I joined the police, and for most of my career, I wouldn't know what police values were. Now everyone knows primed. You won't find many police officers that couldn't repeat our values. So those sorts of things are positive. But there will still be people there that don't accept that the style of policing that may have been appropriate or was the norm, not necessarily appropriate 20, 30 years ago, isn't now. And those people should move on.
What specifically? We know broadly what you're talking about with that change. But what specifically is sticking in the craw of some people?
I think not perhaps valuing that much of what was done in the past was successful and worked. I think that's what people struggle with, the idea that you have to change everything. Also,
be specific. So we know that the quote-unquote Wokester Police Commissioner, to quote the Minister Bridges, has referenced policing with consent and referenced Robert Peel and on and on. But, for example, if you don't have the buy-in with a certain community and you don't try and work with a certain community, you are probably just going to end up at war with that community. That makes sense to me. The fact that there is an inherent racial bias in our justice statistics is pretty darn obvious too, and that can be driven by, if you're brown, I'm going to search you, if you're Pākehā, I'm not. We can all get that, can't we? I mean, everyone gets that. So is it that level stuff, or is it something else?
Oh, look, if I was to give you a bit of an example, when they brought in the Prevention First strategy, one of the biggest problems with it created a lot more work for police. there were no more resources, so they had to give stuff away. The value of investigations was something that really stuck in a lot of people's throat. The idea that if you investigate and solve a crime, that isn't prevention, meant there was not the the value put around that. And that really hurt a lot of investigators. When I actually think, and now I think police now accept it, if you're solving crime, you're catching the people that are doing a burglary, chances are you're preventing them doing another 20 burglaries the next week. So that value really hurt some of the some people. So that's a really on-the-ground example of what went wrong.
You might prevent them doing a burglary, 20 burglaries next week, and I understand how distressing burglary is, for sure. But are you doing anything to stop them committing burglary again when they're released?
Yeah.
Isn't that the sort of the nexus of this stuff?
Well, that's the thing. So as an example, you've got a young 14-year-old that goes out and does a lot of burglaries. If you don't catch him in the first place and hold him to account for those burglaries, then you're never going to be able to intervene going forward. But the second part is, now you've caught him, what are you going to do with him? Is, you know, sending him to juvenile detention or whatever the best? No, it probably isn't. What about trying to get him into some better schooling or get him a trade or something like that?
And do some people resist that? Do some people say, having caught the 14-year-old, we should be what?
Look, you'll have different opinions. And the challenge, of course, is when you see the same, when it doesn't work, and you see the same 14-year-old coming back again and again. But I think the idea around, there's so many positive initiatives going on in the police where people are willing to invest that time in the 14-year-old to get the turnaround. And there's many examples where those kids that would have normally just joined a gang have been turned around. We need to do more of that. But I'd also say police only have so many resources. A lot of other government departments need to be involved in that, turning off the tap, shall we say.
So what I'm taking from you is a lot of this perceived bullying is people who don't like this change. Is it broader than that?
It's also style. I mean, there's a lot of it is people who simply aren't good, haven't been taught good leadership skills. So their leadership skills are around directing you to do something now, rather than working together as a team, understanding the value of listening to different opinions. So the police are doing some big changes around their leadership training. I'm open to it, but I think we have to make sure, you know, whether it works. Whether it's quite the right model, I'm not so sure.
What are your doubts about the model? Explain it.
Well, I just, whether it's going to be directed enough at the mix of operational skill and leadership capabilities, and just
getting
the mix quite right.
It's going to be too much putting people in leadership workshops. Is that your worry?
Yeah. I'm willing to give it a chance, and we'll just see how it unfolds. But, one good thing is they're willing to try something different. And I think a lot of organisations haven't invested in leaders.
Don't good leaders allow people to try things? And I appreciate on a day-to-day basis this stuff to get done. But I think of one of the most striking police officers I think I've ever interviewed, who literally does God's work, whoever your God is, was a woman who goes around and visits paedophiles who've been released from prison and are living in the community, and sits down and talks with them and says, how are you doing today? How are things going? What are you thinking? What's going on with you? What are your stresses? It's not nice work.
No.
That woman is doing more to prevent crime than in the most heinous crime, most hated crime, than anyone else I can think of. Now, I bet she had to carve and argue a place for that, and I could name you numerous other examples of people doing this stuff. And if you don't have a boss who says, yes, those hours are worth it, it doesn't happen, does it? So doesn't this get to the heart of having some diversity of thinking, especially when you have been in your job for a long time?
100%. I mean, the best leaders are those that surround themselves with other people that have good ideas, and letting them grow and try those little, and trusting that they won't all work. But if you give it a go, you're going to probably get some good results
out
of the end.
Is it possible that some of this also is just the wrong people being appointed by people who are just like them and who are frankly just not great at it?
Look, there's been some of that, or people that have some great skills, but they haven't been given the investment in the other side. And that's really important. I mean, I think, you know, we do need to remember the example you just gave. I could give you dozens of examples of that great work happening in police. This report shouldn't be underestimated. There's bad stuff there. But I could write a report with a hell of a lot of brilliant things that are happening as well.
My point is, some of that stuff you have to get across the desk of someone. And when we talk about diversity of thought, letting people have a different opinion, that's a big part of it, right?
Yeah, that's the key to me. That will solve most of these problems when the value of different people's opinions and ideas is really valued totally and brought into the decision-making process.
The IPCA, I understand, is going to monitor police self-reporting on this to some extent. Do you, I mean, what role do you see for your association as a police union?
Well, we want to see, one of the key things, we want to see this new, the replacement for Speak Up, the Kia 2 project, we want to see that it works and that it's actually having results for the people that come forward and have issues. Because that was clear to us that they weren't getting those results. And while that bad advice that you talked about was given, I can understand perhaps why it was given, because it was never working. So we want to make sure that process works. The second is we want to see that people are telling us that they feel a change from the top, that their district commanders, that their inspectors, that their senior sergeants are actually valuing their opinions rather than shutting them down.
Chris Cahill, thank you. He is the president of the Police Union, the Police Association.